This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to the official Raiders podcast. I'm your host, JT. The Raiders take on the Green Bay Packers this Sunday, December 20th at O.co Coliseum. A Green Bay Packer team that comes in off a win against the Dallas Cowboys. They're 9-4 on the season, and the Raiders with a monster win on the road at Denver. The Raiders come in at a record of 6-7. Raider Nation, the talk all week long has been about Khalil Mack and the five-sack performance. The Mack attack was absolutely amazing. He was the AFC Defensive Player of the Week, and it's just so good that the Raiders come into this game against a high-profile team with momentum. To go into Denver, to knock out the division leader, to have that type of defensive performance, and be able to come from behind and win that game in a hostile environment was huge for the Silver and Black. Now the Raiders, with momentum, can win a game and get back to 500 on the year and really cause havoc for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. But again, it's been the story of this entire season. Can the Raiders build on momentum and do it again? Play a good game or a good half and then immediately come out in the next game and have another big-time performance. But for Khalil Mack with 14 sacks, the overall play of the defensive line, the ability for Jack Del Rio to make adjustments at halftime, to light into that team at the half when they were getting shut out, the offense couldn't move, and then to come back and have a big-time performance like that in front of the Bronco fans with the controversy of Brock Osweiler, Peyton Manning on the sideline, Gary Kubiak. That was a big win for the Raiders, and now the Raiders look forward to this opportunity on Sunday. They'll take on a Green Bay Packer team that before the regular season started, I thought this was a Super Bowl contender. Really that good of a team. Now that they're 9-4, and they are 4-2 on the road, this is a team that has a one-game lead over the Minnesota Vikings in their division, and they're looking to peak at the right time heading into the postseason. And that win against Dallas 28-7 was absolutely dominant. We'll talk about Mike McCarthy, the head coach, who's now calling the plays again. And in that game, Green Bay ran for 230 yards. Eddie Lacy had 124 on the ground. James Starks, 71 yards at 6.5 per carry. And the receivers are threats to the Raiders. You remember James Jones, who's playing well, 35 receptions for 660 yards and 7 touchdowns. And Randall Cobb is their go-to guy that Jordy Nelson has hurt. He's got 737 yards on the year and 6 touchdowns. And that defense has got guys who can get after it. Future Hall of Famers in Julius Peppers and Clay Matthews, along with Ha-Ha Clinton Dix in the secondary. And it comes down to the return of Aaron Rodgers, who played his college football at Cal. If not the best player in all of football, he's in the top three. Rodgers comes into this game, 28 touchdowns, only 5 interceptions, 3,175 yards. But this is a Packers team that lost at the Broncos, lost at the Panthers, lost to the Lions, and lost to the Bears at home. But they seem to have their legs underneath them as they come into this game. And it's interesting, you look at the stats of Aaron Rodgers, Derek Carr, 28 touchdowns, 9 interceptions for 3,313 yards. If I told you that Carr would have more yards than Aaron Rodgers coming into this game back in Napa, I don't think you would have believed me. But again, the Raiders really need to build momentum and get a win at home in front of the black hole and keep going, get over 500 eventually, and still play in this playoff hunt. Now let's get to our Packers guest. Joining us is Pete Doherty from the Green Bay Press Gazette and PackersNews.com. And Pete, thanks for joining us on the official Raiders podcast. And I want to begin by talking about that last win for the Packers against the Cowboys. Mike McCarthy taking over the play calling. How big of an influence do you think that had on the game, especially the 230 yards on the ground?
It looked pretty significant. You know, the thing that just jumped out at you more than anything was the tempo. They were getting the plays in quicker. They were getting at the, you know, they run a no huddle, but previously they'd been running the play clock down pretty far down on almost every play. You know, sometimes you're doing that to make the defense declare, but at other times it was just, you know, the play coming in a little bit later. On this last Sunday against Dallas, it was, everything was happening really fast. I think they had 81 plays from scrimmage, which is the, you know, one of their highest of the year, which is what, and it's what they're looking for. The tempo was just so much better. It looked a lot more like the offense that we've seen for the last 5 years than it had for the first 12 weeks.
How comfortable does that get Aaron Rodgers going forward, not only for this Raiders game, but especially the rest of the schedule and the playoff coming? They want more balance with the running game. That opens up play action, and it makes Aaron Rodgers less pass predictable, I would agree.
Yeah, and, you know, with Jordy Nelson, you know, if they're not running the ball well, they're still a pretty capable offense. Having Lacy play well is still important and gives them balance if Nelson's playing. But if he's not playing, obviously he's out for the year, they have to be able to run the ball. They've got to have Eddie Lacy playing like the guy he was his first 2 years in the league and not like the guy that he was for, you know, most of the first 12 weeks. So that's huge, that balance, that threat of the run, what it does to the pass rush, what it does to the defensive play calls. It's a really big deal, and they need, if they're going anywhere in the postseason, they need Eddie Lacy to be a really big part of it.
Pete Doherty's our guest. Pete, tell us more about Lacy, and from covering him in training camp since he was drafted, being with this organization, is he a good fit? Does he butt heads with the coaching staff? Is he a great teammate? Because once he gets on a roll and starts running downhill, he's one of the toughest backs to bring down.
You know, the feeling you get just observing him, and from, you know, when people talking about him, I think he's a really good guy, you know, a good guy to be around. He's very kind of a happy-go-lucky guy in the locker room. I don't think there's a mean bone in the guy's body, as you know, as far as that goes. But he did get heavy. He came into camp a little heavier this year, right around 240, where he had been more in the mid 230s. And then he got hurt early in the year, and I think he, from what I heard, he got up to, you know, in the mid 250s, and it made a difference. He wasn't as quick to the hole. He wasn't as quick on his cuts. But he also didn't seem to be running as well or as hard. So, you know, I don't know everything that went into that, but they demoted him earlier in the year, and then he came back and had a couple of good games, and then he missed this curfew 2 weeks ago against Detroit, and they demoted him again, and he really came back like he had something to prove against Dallas. And, you know, it's been a bad year for him. He's had three good games, and he looked like the Eddie Lacy of the last 2 years against Dallas this last week. And, you know, like I said, I mean, I don't think they're going anywhere unless he is that kind of player for the rest of the season, and especially in the postseason.
Pete, I've always liked James Starks. He can get yards in bunches, 71 yards, 6.5 per carry in the last game. He's a threat as a receiver out of the backfield. So to have that, you know, two-headed monster last week against Dallas en route to 230 yards, that's got to be cause for concern for the Raiders, because even though Khalil Mack had the five sacks, the Raiders' pass defense is ranked 28th. In the league, and Aaron Rodgers is one of the greatest I've ever seen in my career at stepping up and avoiding pressure, extending the pocket, and making plays downfield. Talk about Starks, and especially the play of James Jones, who had a bunch of touchdowns early. He was a former Raider, but the addition of Randall Cobb, and now Cobb with only six touchdowns on the year, I would expect him to have a breakout game at some point heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, Starks is a really good complimentary back. You know, I don't think you want him as your number one. For one thing, he's had most of his career, he's been healthy this year, but most of his career, he's missed games, I think, almost every season, you know, for either small or major injuries. But as a complimentary back, he's excellent. I guess he's the kind of guy you probably want to get him, you know, anywhere from 6 to 12 touches a game. And, you know, that's plenty, because you still want Lacy getting the majority of them. So, but they are better when both of those guys are playing, and they're both power guys. So, they have a good running game between the tackles with them. Cobb has really suffered with Nelson being out. If anybody, you know, we were all probably wondering if Cobb could be a number one, and I think this year has proven that he can't be a number one. He needs a number one to take to occupy a lot of the coverage, and then he can be an excellent number two. And defenses have been doubling him this year, and that's why he only has six TDs, and his catches are down, and his yards per catch are down. Jones, you know, with Nelson's injury, when the Giants cut him, they picked him up and put him right in at their number three. Obviously, he knows the system, and Aaron Rodgers had a huge amount of trust in him, and he was catching a lot of contested balls. They were getting a lot of free plays early in the year on 12-man penalties and offsides penalties, and it seemed like the majority of those throws were going to Jones, but he's got some real limitations as far as speed goes, and their whole receiving core is having trouble getting open. And, you know, Jones is, you know, neck deep in that. Mm-hmm. And the cascade effect of not having Nelson. I mean, everybody who observes this team, you know, knew Nelson was a really good player and was important to them. But I'm not sure, for instance, that I realized the degree to which he occupied coverage because, you know, they didn't have any trouble getting receivers open the past couple of years, the past 3 years. But this season, it's been a real struggle, especially since, you know, about the third or fourth game of the year, starting at San Francisco in week four. They've really had trouble having the receivers get separation.
We're wrapping up with Pete Doherty. He covers the Packers for the Green Bay Press Gazette and PackersNews.com. Let's cover the defense for a second with Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, Clinton Dix, and this defense's ability to get off the field on third down and make big plays. Overall ranked 18th in total defense at 350 yards a game. The strength of this team, I guess, is the pass defense, which is ranked 11th overall. When you look at the Raiders and the young Amari Cooper and the play of Michael Crabtree and especially Derek Carr at quarterback. Touch on the matchup and what's the concern from the Green Bay side?
Yeah, it'd be a really interesting matchup because the Raiders do have a lot of talent there. A big key will be whether Sam Shields plays. He's their best corner and he's their fastest corner. He's in the four legit, you know, upper 4.2s or low 4.3s, so he can run with Cooper. But he had a concussion. This had to leave the concussion and leave the game because of concussion against Dallas. And so we don't know yet if he's going to be available this week. The Packers have a good young secondary. Their first and second round picks were corners, Demarius Randall and Rollins. So those guys both play a lot. Randall has become the starter opposite Shields, and he's a really good athlete and a good looking prospect. And I think he's going to be a good player. He is a rookie, so there's a lot of things he hasn't seen. But if Shields plays, they'll match up okay. I'm sure those guys will make their plays. Cooper's going to make some plays. He's a really talented guy. Crabtree goes and gets the ball. But the Packers at least have talent in the secondary. Their pass rush isn't the greatest, but they're probably their most talented group on defense, position group, is the defensive backs.
Hey, Pete, finally, with the lead over the Vikings in the division, Carolina undefeated, Arizona really good. You know how good the Seahawks are, and they are coming. Russell Wilson is playing at a high level. Is this a Super Bowl bust mentality for the Packers? Because coming into the regular season, I thought this was a favorite, or the 1A team, possibly with the Cowboys who flamed out, or a team, if they stayed healthy, would be right there as a Super Bowl contender. What's the mindset of the Packer fans coming in now that we're in the last quarter of the season? Does this team, in your mind, have a chance still to get to and win the Super Bowl?
Yeah, we all thought that this was going to be one of the best couple teams, and so did Las Vegas, for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, I still think they can be, and McCarthy taking over the play calling has improved their prospects quite a bit. When you have a quarterback, you know, Rodgers is an elite quarterback, one of the probably three best in the game. You have a guy that good, he can get hot, and he can find his chemistry with his receivers. That could happen any time during the season, and so they're capable of going on a run. There was nothing to suggest it, though, going into, you know, for the last basically 2 months. Then they look much improved against Dallas with McCarthy calling the plays. And so, yeah, maybe they do have a chance. The talent's there. There should be enough there. If you get Lacy running well like he did against the Cowboys, it wouldn't be a shocker if they made a nice run in the playoffs. But, you know, they still have some proving to do. I think these last three games in the regular season will be really important just to improve that chemistry and kind of get their rhythm back with McCarthy calling plays.
Great job, Pete. Thanks so much for joining us on the official Raiders podcast. We'll talk to you down the road. Thanks for your time.
All right. Sounds good, JT. See ya.
Let's continue on the official Raiders podcast. We're joined by Brady Papinga, former Packers linebacker. He played 8 seasons in the NFL, won a Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers back in 2010. He was on that roster with the great Charles Woodson, and he joins us on the official Raiders podcast. Brady, I want to begin with the Packers and expectations. They sit here at 9-4 going into Oakland this Sunday. Should they be happy about that or upset overall that they trail the Carolina Panthers, the undefeated Panthers in the playoff race, and the Arizona Cardinals?
Well, they would say they're going to be disappointed, JT, and that's because they feel like these games, these close ones, that they lost, like against the Chicago Bears at home, were games that they should have been able to come out victorious with, and lo and behold, they weren't. And so 9-4 is disappointing to them, but still, come on, let's be honest. If you could win 9-10 games a year in the NFL, that's a successful season. And as history has shown us, 9 or 10 games is enough to not only put yourself in position to win a Super Bowl, JT, but also to win it all.
Aaron Rodgers is a friend of yours. Do you think deep down he's disappointed that in the prime of his career, he probably lost a MVP this year just because of a couple of bad games that you talked about, and that trophy is gone this year, or does he not care about that? He just wants to win another ring.
He's all about the rings there, JT. You know, he learned that from Brett Favre. Brett Favre was a guy that he just went out to play because he was a kid in the playground, and lo and behold, incidentally, he went and broke records and became an all-time great, and then won a Super Bowl. Aaron saw that and saw that not only is it a way to live in terms of just having your mind free, but also it's a way to perform at your highest level because it takes a lot of the pressure off. But I'm sure Aaron wished he had it. Jordy Nelson with him, he wished he would be able to go out and have similar success this year as he's had in years past of being an explosive, unstoppable offense, whereas right now they're very dependent on the running game. They're a little bit more measured. And that's because his wide receiving core is a little banged up, talking specifically about Jordy being gone for the year, and they're having troubles against man-to-man coverage. But all in all, I would say that he's overall pleased with where they're at because, like I said, they know they're in position to have a place in the tournament, and that's all you need.
Brady Papenga joins us. Knowing Mike McCarthy the way you do, how big of a decision was it for him to jump back in and call the plays, and then we see a 230-yard rushing game in the blowout of the Dallas Cowboys 28-7 last Sunday?
Well, you know, Mike, he's the kind of guy that he would like to be able to be a delegator and sit back and have an offensive coordinator do all the work on the offensive side of the ball, and it already happens on the defensive side of the ball. That's why he hired a seasoned vet in Dom Capers back in 2009, so he could basically give Dom full autonomy over that defense. But offensively, what I think started eating at him is the fact that, one, his offense didn't look the same in terms of explosiveness, turning up points as it had when he was calling the plays. And two, I think he's getting a little bored. And also, you could see at times that him and Aaron were sort of butting heads, and the middleman was Tom Clements. You know, Tom's like, hey, guys, you forgot about me. I thought I had a say in things when, in fact, McCarthy was, I think, overstepping his bounds when you talk about him giving up the play calls. And so I think it came to this head to where McCarthy was like, hey, I'm just going to take back the reins. I'm sick of sitting on the sidelines, folding my arms and trying to manage the game. And, oh, by the way, it paid off. There was a couple plays in there, JT, that you could tell that McCarthy had taken the reins back because they were just perfectly called plays that you could see that it took – somebody with an innate experienced ability of calling plays to go with those plays. They ended up being big plays, one of which went to James Starks. It was a nice little swing pass out to the flat when nobody was expecting it. High percentage play. It ended up in a touchdown. And another one was a screen pass, both in the fringe red zone area to John Kuhn, a fullback. They hadn't even shown that play all year long. It was in their repertoire and game plan of potential plays, but never was called. But both plays were effective because they're high percentage, A, and then B, they were unexpected by the defense.
Brady Papenga joins us. Brady, you won a Super Bowl with Charles Woodson with the Packers. What do you think of Woodson's play so far this year? And I got to get your comments on Khalil Mack. The 5 sacks for the Raiders goes from 9 to 14. What a performance Mack had on the road at Denver.
Yeah, well, you know, Charles Woodson, he's 1 in a billion. The guy doesn't have to practice. The guy doesn't really even have to work hard in the offseason. He could literally show up on game day and dominate. But my first vision of Charles Woodson, JT, was him walking out to practice lollygagging. It looked like he was strolling through the park with his gloves hanging from the bottom of his face mask. His chin strap was not buckled up, and he was wearing a watch, checking the time every 5 minutes. When is this going to end? Literally, in practice. Sort of moseying around, and Kevin Green, I'll never forget it. Kevin Green, you know, very tightly wound, type A personality, comes in 2009, and he's just going crazy. Charles, what? And we're all looking at him going, buddy, just chill out. This is how Charles does his thing. And then sure enough, when the lights turned on, what happened with Charles in 2009? Became the defensive player of the year. So he's a special player. We'll get it out of the history books, and it doesn't surprise me at all that he continues to play at a high level, even though he's had to switch from his nickelback cornerback position back to a safety.
Brady, last one in under a minute. The Raiders say once a Raider, always a Raider. How important was it for you to be a Packer to win a Super Bowl for one of the great iconic franchises in North American sports history?
You know, it's fantastic. I was actually thinking about somewhat along those lines today about Green Bay, and it's a small-knit community, and here you, you know, you have some of the best football being played in the world in a community of literally 100,000 people, where they're constantly contending for Super Bowls, the tradition and the history. And at times, you just, for me, because I'm a small town guy, you know, I live here in Los Angeles, but I'm a guy that grew up in Evanston, Wyoming, of 12,000 people. So when I was in Green Bay, I felt like it was always just small town. It was always good. It was all homegrown. It was all just down to earth. It was great. You know, nothing overly hyped up. And that's how the Packers still operate today, even though, like you said, they're one of the greatest franchises in NFL history. And even so, that's why I think makes them so special.
Great catching up with Brady Papinga again on the Official Raiders Podcast. One of the all-time great Raider legends joins us, and I thought he'd be perfect coming off the Raider win at Denver. Legendary linebacker Rod Martin joins us. Rod, first off, thanks for coming on, and I know you're coming up to Oakland for the game against the Packers. Should be a big one coming off the win.
It's going to be a huge one, This would be a great victory for the Raiders to have, you know, the QB. I don't like to give him no praise. I mentioned his name too many times. You know, the opportunity to come back to the Bay Area, and we're going to treat him like the Raiders know how to treat quarterbacks from the Bay.
Well, I wanted to have you on this week because of the performance by Khalil Mack and the five sacks at Denver. You had the greatest game defensively, I believe, in Raider history with your three interceptions in Super Bowl 15. But what was going through your mind in the second half once Mack kept getting to Osweiler, five sacks in the second half, and it really ranks up there along with you and Howie Long as one of the great individual performances in Raider history?
That had that whole offensive team worried about where Mack was, and what was so good that they were moving from side to side, and I think that helped out tremendously. The offensive lineman could not keep up with his speed. Without a doubt, he was doing a lot of speed rushing, and you know, he's still young, he's still learning it, and that should be scary for everybody in the league.
Yeah, Rod, I think it's interesting. When I saw you up in Napa before the start of the season, everybody's talking about him and comparing him to the late Derek Thomas, Lawrence Taylor, all the great pass rushers, let alone the great Raider pass rushers. How do you think the young man has handled all that? Because now that praise is really coming on strong this week.
I think that he loves the game of football, first of all. You know, he still has that passion and the love for the game in his soul. And he wants to be the best that he can be. And he's trying to show everybody that, you know, the Raiders did not make a mistake by drafting him number one. And he wants to prove right now, you know, that the pressure's on him because, you know, everybody look at him as being the number one man, the number one sack man. And the pressure's on him. He's handling the pressure very well. Some people can't handle the pressure. You know, they come out there, we used to say they get all uptight. They go out there, they bust like a pop like a pea. You know, and he's doing very good right now. And I could just see him get better and better as the years go by and his more playing time in the big league.
Rod Martin joins us. Rod, in the coaching there for Jack Del Rio to put that game plan in, that was a big one because he was the defensive coordinator of the Broncos. Ken Norton Jr. and all the success that he had as a player and a coach up in Seattle, it's just great that Mack and the rest of the defense, especially the defensive line and the way they're playing, have defensive coaches who have proven in this league as players and coaches. It seems like they're coming together at the right time.
No doubt. I mean, you know, Brick, we had one of the best defensive coordinators of all time, I think, Charlie Sumner. And he was put us in the position to win. And you know, and Al Davis always said, you know, nobody gives us nothing. We take what we want. And that's the attitude that the Raiders got to continue to do that. You know, when Mack learns to, you know, have his rip moves going up and his, you know, his spins and all that other stuff, and they have an X's and crosses and things going on in the offensive line, he's going to be really tough to handle. And Jack is going to, you know, is a defensive man, minded individual, so is, you know, Norton. So the defense wins championships. We know this. You know, offense put people in the stands. Defense wins championships.
Hey, Rod, when you got to USC, who were the players and especially the coaches that defined your greatness and coached you up to the next level so you could succeed not only at SC but in the NFL?
Well, when I first got to USC, John McKay was the coach. So he came in and he had some people on the coaching staff. Marv Gould, who was the defensive line coach, we worked with him. And and Don Lindsay was a linebacker coach that helped us to become players that we developed to be NFL-type players. And, you know, and it's just coming from a program that had the knowledge, that had the coaches in order to give the knowledge to you to excel. And I think that's what helped me get to the next level. And Charlie Sumner, again, was the defensive coordinator for us, and he definitely made us, you know, want to be aggressive players and want to attack. We wanted to attack people. We didn't want to sit back and let them attack us. Our mentality was, we're going to attack you. You got to stop us the best way you can because you don't know where we're going to come from. We ran that 3-4 defense and that four linebackers that made things happen all the time. We had great defensive linemen. And, you know, it meshed together well, and we played well as a unit, and we attacked people. And that's what defense does. They attack.
Rod Martin joins us on the Official Raiders podcast. Hey, Rod, it wasn't easy for you as a 12th-round pick. You were guaranteed nothing when you came into this league. Tell our listeners about what it was like the first year and a half with Mr. Davis, the coaches, the teammates, and how hard you had to work just to make a name for yourself to stay on the field, let alone get on the field.
Yeah, Rick, you know, I mean, I was 12A now. You know, I was the first 12th-round in that Raider draft. Rolf Manerski was 12B for us, the kicker, you know, from San Diego, sure. Mostly his career in San Diego. But, you know, we came in together. We had a group of guys that came in. The Raiders had just won the Super Bowl against the Minnesota Vikings. And they drafted Mike Davis, Jeff Barnes, Mickey Marvin, Lester Hayes, Terry Robiski, Rich Martini. I mean, most of those guys, we became the nucleus of the next two Super Bowl wins. So, when we got there, you know, we wanted to keep playing the Raider-type ball that they were playing to win the Super Bowl. And looked up to guys that were still there. My mentor was Jack Tatum. I didn't want to embarrass none of those guys. And everybody that was drafted out of here had the same mentality. We want to go out there. We want to make something happen. We want to make sure that the Raiders' legacy is going to continue. And we played well as a team, man. And we had the camaraderie where we used to go out and as a group of guys, like on Thursday nights, and just hang out and just be part of the family, you know, and that's what it was about. It was just about the family and, you know, the way what our goals and dreams were, and that was to win the Super Bowl, to get in the playoffs, and then win the Super Bowl.
Hey, Rod, not only did you had a great Super Bowl 15, but you also had a magnificent Super Bowl 18, and a lot of fans stop you, and I know they want to see your rings and talk about those defining moments, but there were huge regular season games and playoff games leading up to those Super Bowls. Give me one or two memories of a pivotal game in the playoffs or regular season that got you to the Super Bowl so you could excel on the greatest stage.
Well, you know, there's a couple of games that got, you know, excelled us to it. And I think the first one from Super Bowl, going to Super Bowl 15, where they were driving on us towards the end of the game, and we were trying to put a rush on them, and they decided to throw the ball instead of trying to kick a field goal because they had missed one earlier on that icy dirt that they were kicking on. And Mike Davis intercepts the ball in the end zone in front of Ozzie Newsome. And we felt that we were like, team of destiny after that game, and we knew we were going to go back to play San Diego and San Diego, who beat us twice during the regular season, and it was a payback game, and it just, you know, it just started happening, man, along the way, and that was just that first game. The second game was when Seattle had beat us twice during the season, and we met them again in the AFC Championship game, and we ended up getting back with them and playing them, you know, to the in L.A., and we beat them. So it was things like that that just motivated us throughout the whole season. You know, we have three different seasons, of course. You have the preseason, you have the regular season, and you have the postseason. And you want to elevate yourself and have consistency playing towards the end, at the end of the regular season. So you have that momentum going on into the playoffs. And then we had that, and then the first wild card team, that was phenomenal for us.
Yeah, the memories are unbelievable. We're wrapping it up with Rod Martin. What was Mr. Davis like in the regular season compared to after winning the Super Bowl? What memories do you have with Mr. Davis, the intensity before the big games and during those victory celebrations?
Rick, you know, I mean, he used to always come out to practice, man. You know, I mean, his presence was there all the time. And, you know, we wanted to perform. We wanted to perform on the field for him and for us to, as the organization as well. He was just a motivating guy. People don't realize, you know, the things that was going on at the time when we were going to Super Bowl 15. They had the hostage crisis. You know, they had just released the hostages. And when we played the Super Bowl 15, you know, Mr. Davis was talking about moving to L.A. I mean, we had a lot of different things that could have, you know, deterred us from playing the game of football. But we didn't let that happen to us, you know. We stayed focused, and we went out there to do the job and to keep the organization going in the right direction and have Mr. Davis proud of us, of players, and saw that he had somebody that's going to play hard for him no matter what.
Hey, Rod, finally, what's the relationship like with Mark Davis? I know you're very close with him. You've watched him grow up, not only as a Davis, but within the organization. I'm sure you enjoy connecting with him before the games, sitting with him during the games. What's the relationship like with the current owner, Mark Davis?
Mark is a great guy. He's a great person. He wants to follow his dad's footprint and, you know, have the organization keep winning and have his own legacy developed. Mark's a great guy, you know, and we're hoping that, you know, his success is going to continue as time goes along. He's put it in Reggie McKenzie's hand, my old teammate, to make things happen and bring in the right people to win it for him. So at the beginning of it, everybody didn't think it was going to work. You know, it wasn't looking good. Now that it's meshing together again, you know, the Raiders are getting strong again and they're going in the right direction. I see a lot of great things happening. And Mark is the reason why it's all is coming about. You know, he gave Reggie the reins to go out and to make something happen, and Reggie's doing it as well. But all the credit goes to Mark Davis.
Well, I love the fact that you started off and you wouldn't mention Aaron Rodgers' name. That gives the Raider Nation the edge that they need heading into this game on Sunday, looking to get back to 500, keeping the playoff hopes alive. And I wanted to talk to you all year long on the Official Raider Podcast. Rod, I'll see you Sunday. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks a lot, brother. Good to see you.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Official Raiders Podcast. Raider fans, Raider Nation, I'll see you on Sunday as the Raiders get set to take on the Packers. For everyone at Silver and Black Productions, I'm JT. Thanks for downloading the podcast at Raiders.com, at iTunes, and follow the Raiders via Twitter and on Facebook. Go Raiders, beat the Packers.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.